Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Hi, welcome to this week's edition of Blues Talk. Again, John, Dave, and myself. We're going to look forward to Leinster's game against Munster down in Thomond this weekend. And, of course, look forward to all the other Pro 14 games and maybe have a bit of a discussion about the forthcoming Six Nations. So, lads, big game down in Thomond. We have won, I think it's 8 of the last 9. But I think Munster will be gunning for a bit of blood this time.
Oh, yeah. Munster are always gunning for a bit of blood. They just haven't been in a place that they can capitalise on that gunningness. However, they're looking a lot better nowadays. Their stuff is really starting to come together for them. And we're just starting to look a little bit fallible now that we've lost to Connacht. So it might be a great time for them to meet us. It's going to be great for the fans anyway, with the one bugbear that everybody has. Of teams, full strength teams not being fielded in Interpros looks unlikely to occur, seeing as all the players are going to need a warm up for the Six Nations because there aren't any other. There's one more game next, catch up fixture for Leinster the next week, but other than that, Munster played all their matches and there's no Europe. Munster have another game in hand somewhere as well, but I'm not sure it's been scheduled yet. But yeah, we've the next 2 weeks in a row, we're leading nicely into the Six Nations. So all our chaps can get a good run out, which is what the league was set up for in the first place, let's face it. Get fellas a run out for Europe to get them a run out for Ireland. So bring it on. I'm definitely looking forward to it. Don't know about the rest yet. I'm pretty sure you are.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you can't enjoy a match of this level in any sport, maybe sport isn't your thing. It's actually going to be like you were saying. Munster are playing well. They have good players in the right positions. It's going to be very, very tough. Leinster aren't playing all that well, or not playing as well as they were before Christmas, anyway. So it'll be an interesting clash. I mean, the one thing about this game that was always important, because before Leinster started winning, the game against Munster was always something that was important because it was a way of showing, you know, to people that they weren't actually just, you know, always the bridesmaids or the losers or whatever, and that they could take on teams of the caliber of Munster who were, you know, European champions and stuff like that, and were regular visitors to the business end of European tournaments, whereas we weren't. Since that's happened, You'd assume that the roles have changed. I'm not entirely sure they have. I don't think Munster processed their place. No, not their place. That's the wrong word. Processed where they were in processed the level they were at accurately until the last year or two maybe, and now they have this game's important to them because this will show that they're capable of making a sustained challenge and beating the top teams in Europe. They've got good players in, like I said. Deende looks like been probably their best import since maybe Trevor Halstead. They've got strength in depth, however they came by it, and I know people criticize how they came by it, but you know, that's what it is. It is what it is. So they have strength in depth in key positions, and there's interesting battles all over the pitch as regards Irish selection, not just for the game in and of itself, but in the wider picture of both Irish and world rugby. So there's a lot of factors going into this game that make it, you know, one of the more important Munster-Leinster clashes in recent years.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but like there seems to have been an awful lot of hype about them. Now bandwagon is starting to motor again, especially after their win against Clermont. That seems to have stoked the Flyers down there. I've watched a few podcasts this week, on whether it's on Off the Ball or on RTE. And certainly that victory against Clermont has been mentioned umpteen ad nauseum, actually.
It is a major achievement beating a team who lost to Montpellier at home.
Yeah, well, I've actually went through their results. They've lost 5 of their 13 games, and they've drawn another one. So they've only won 7 and drawn 1 of their. So they've lost at home to Racing, they lost at home to Montpellier, and then they lost to Toulon away, La Rochelle away, Bayonne away, and then they drew at Bordeaux away. So, like, they're by far and away from being, you know, a team that's, while they're 5th in the league, in French league, they're far from being, you know, back to their sort of top 2 in the championships standard.
They're not the Michelin team.
Well, not, you know, I mean, we've gone down there in the past and lost, you know, it's obviously a big achievement to win down there, but this is not a classic Clermont team. Munster's form in the Pro 14 has been pretty good. Like, they've won 8 of their 9 matches so far. If they sent up quite a weakened side up to Ulster a few weeks ago. And that probably was their undoing. You know, that it was kind of their thirds. But, like, if we kind of look back even at the start of when we returned to action on the 22nd of August, was the first match. And it was kind of a bit of a classic match when we narrowly beat them 27-25. But, like, there's obviously only 2 points difference in that game. And then we beat them in the semi-final. Again, it was quite close. It was 13-3. But I thought we were by far the stronger team that day on that semi-final than the opening match of the return to action. So, like, I think the gap is starting to narrow. I'm just not sure it's narrowed enough for them to win.
Well, we'll see on Saturday. But, you know, to just briefly on Clermont, I remember being there in 2013, and I don't think they'd lost a game in something like 5 years at home at that stage. And we went down to them by a couple of points. I remember there was a line out near the end that could have won it for us. But, you know, that's the Clermont of old. You know, they've lost more games in the last few games than they lost in 5 seasons back then.
Like, they've lost 3 this season down there.
Yeah.
3 at home. Yeah.
So, but back to Munster. It's hard. It's very hard to know, of course. Have they caught up enough? But they don't need to have caught up all the way to us to beat us on the day in Tallaght Park. You know, they don't. It doesn't mean if we lose this game at the weekend, it doesn't mean that's it. It's like Croke Park 2009. Tables have turned. It's all over. It doesn't mean that at all. It would be a setback, though, both for our ambitions in the league and for just the whole, you know, the bragging rights and all the usual stuff. So, yeah, we're definitely going to be gunning to win this thing. And so are Munster. And that's what's going to make it such an exciting game.
There are many reasons why Munster can and could well win this game. The game in Clermont ain't one of them. It's got nothing to do with it. And I think Munster rugby know, or Munster within themselves, within the squad, within the coaching team, know what's going to be needed to beat Leinster. And talking about Clermont won't do it. They will beat us because they're playing better than us at the moment. I mean, that's the reality. We're not playing overly well. Bit of a return to form against Ulster. But Munster are playing, of the 4 Irish teams, Munster and, to a certain extent, Ulster are the 2 teams playing the best rugby. If you'd asked me the same question in mid-December, it would have been a different answer. But right now, that's where it is. So you'd have to have, it's a home game. It's a local derby. There's no fans there, but there's still, I mean, the home advantage is still significant. You'd have to say Munster would be slight favourites based on that. I still think we're a better team, and if we play as well as we can play, then we will win.
But will we?
There's some interesting positional battles considering the Six Nations is just around the corner. Like, I mean, I tried to select both sides and looked and trying to compare and contrast. Obviously, the teams haven't been announced yet, but can certainly say that there's some selections that are, barring injury, they're definitely going to take place. So I'm looking at sort of CJ versus Doris. I think that's one that's going to be. I mean, I'm sure CJ would prefer to play number 8 on the national side. And Doris has kind of come in and taken his spot recently in the last 12 months. So no doubt he will want to put in a good performance in that one. You've obviously got then Keane Healy against Kilcoyne. Obviously they don't come face to face in the scrum, but you know, there's a, you know, some people would say that Healy's form is starting to decline. You know, again, Murray, Jemison Gibson Park has kind of come in and played reasonably well in the games he was selected for. Murray will want to make a case for selection, or even Casey. You know, I don't know what, I'm sure they're going to go with Murray over Casey, but I certainly know, speaking to a couple of lads I know that support Munster, they're definitely hoping Casey's selected. They see him as the future now. And, you know, they even got, like, looking down, Earls against Kearney. I'm sure Kearney wants to, even though I'd say his days as an Irish winger might be over, I'm sure he wants to give two fingers to the selectors and show that, you know, how good he is up against Keith Earls. And even Lowe and Conway, if they match up against one another, you know, there's not a lot of love lost between the two of them, as we know in previous encounters.
Yeah,
I think you've made a couple of interesting things there. I don't think no matter how well CJ Stander plays, he's going to be playing number 8 for Ireland. I think CJ Stander's battle is with Rhys Ruddock, as things stand. I think Doris is pretty much nailed on for the Ireland number 8 spot, injury aside. The interesting battle is actually going to be at number 7, where I presume Munster will play Peter O'Mahony. Against whoever Leinster will go with. And that could be a significant advantage for Munster, not because of what he does on the ground, because, I mean, frankly, as a number 7, he's mediocre. But what he can do in the air at line-out time, because our line-out's been at fucking shambles all season, certainly in the last 3 months. I mean, you're talking about, they say our line-out stat is at 89%. But in the last couple of games, I'd say it's been lucky to reach the 60s.
A friend of mine said we're the third or fourth best in the league. I mean, like, for a team that's winning the league, we should be first in the league. There's only 12 teams, and 9 of them are, or not 9, but I'd say 7 of them are pretty average.
Yeah, I'd say quite a few more than, I'd say even more than that are average. But I mean, 89% for the season. But in the last 3 games, I mean, we've been dreadful, absolutely dreadful. And the last thing you want to do when you have a lineup that's short of confidence is face up to Peter O'Mahony, who's going to do nothing else in the match except wait for line-out time.
Yep, that's a big advantage to Munster. Also, you're mentioning Doris and CJ Stander and bringing Rhys Ruddock in. I know you've always been a fan of CJ at 6, and always, that's always been a thing of yours, is that he should be selected there. But what about Gavin Coombs, who's come out of nowhere to look very good, very tall bloke as well, can play in the second row. Like, it gives you a whole nother bag of toys there, having a guy that big at 8. He's a bit of a monster, and he's still quite young. I'm not sure of his exact age, but I'd say he's certainly still early 20s. So I'm very interested to see if he gets a shot for Ireland, because, like, he's a beast. I'm very, very impressed with him, and he's great at 8. He has the skills off the back of a scrum and stuff like that make a number 8, that made somebody like Jamie Heaslip, you know, such a guy to have there. Now, Heaslip is a good bit shorter and probably not as powerful, but a different type of athlete, but they both have that thing in common, that their position is number 8. And I noticed Munster played him at 6 with CJ at 8 the last time, mm-hmm. I think they played together. Which is interesting. It's kind of like they're giving CJ a shot for the Ireland 8 or something, rather than, you know, and sticking him at 6.
CJ doesn't have to get into the Irish team at 6. He's not getting in anywhere else.
Well, his Gavin Coombs physique would make you think that he's a six rather than an eight. But for me, anyway, from the small bit I've seen of him, he looks better at eight. So it'll be interesting to see. That's another one thrown into the mix there, you know.
It'll be interesting to see, actually, in terms of guys like you mentioned Coombs, you mentioned Casey, other young players throughout the country in all the provinces. Because Farrell has always struck me as a relatively conservative selector. He brings guys into squads, but then as additional players and stuff, but never actually uses them. So it'll be interesting to see if guys who are younger players or who have blasted through in the last, we say, 6 months, can unseat what might nominally be known as regulars.
Have you ever known an Ireland coach that wasn't? Well,
that's, I mean, I'm not necessarily saying it's his fault. I mean, he lives and dies on international team. He doesn't get any extra kudos for player development. He gets kudos for winning matches. That's all he gets kudos for.
But in a position like it's all right if you're France or England or whoever, that you can blood people and throw fellas. You've got loads of, you know, England would have a lot more players to choose from. France would have a lot more players to choose from. It's easy to swap, you know, and that's actually what's made France shit a few times, is keeping, stopping and starting with different players and never giving anybody a run in a jersey. They did it with 10 for years and years and years. And they were muck for quite a lot of the last decade because of, for a lot of reasons, but that's definitely one of them. England did stuff between World Cups where they blooded a lot of, Stuart Lancaster did it when he was in there. Eddie Jones did it when he was in there, probably not quite as much. But they can have teams that have big amounts of players can afford to do that, you know, available to them, can afford to do that. Teams like Ireland and even more so Scotland, who don't have a huge amount to choose from, like, they're just going to be conservative selectors much more at international level, much more than anybody selecting a team in a Pro 12 or even in Europe is going to be. So it's the nature of the beast. I'm not sure, like you say,
I'm not sure that really stacks up though, Dave. I mean, if you look at his selections, he's only been coached for, you know, let's say 14 months. But in that time, he's brought through young fellas like Darris, like Keenan, Kelleher. You know.
There have been a few, all right.
Like, there's only 15 can play him only one time.
That's a fair point, but I'm talking about guys, we're talking about guys who've really only come onto the scene. I mean, what I'm talking about is guys
Connors,
like...
Will Connors, there's another Pace. One, like that's... Four, yeah,
Will,
you know?
Will Connors made his debut under Matt O'Connor. I mean, it's not as if he's a new guy.
No, hold on now. He might have made his debut. He hasn't... When would you say... Where would you rank him at the start of 18 months ago? Where would you rank him on the pecking order in Leinster?
In Leinster, six, probably seven. Well, okay, yeah, I know what you're saying. Probably somewhere in the near toward, not quite at the bottom, because I'd say Scott Penny was under him, but certainly third choice.
Okay, so you get my point. He has brought through players. You can't throw out everybody and pick, you know, a bunch, 15 fellas we've never heard of and say, no, I.
It should also be pointed out, though, Joe, that when Jason, when Will Connors got picked, both Dan Levy and Josh van der Vlie were out injured for long-term basis. I mean,
yeah,
and he didn't have a huge amount of choice.
To be quite frank with you, Dave, when those two lads come back to full fitness, Will Connors will probably be back to third ranked in Leinster.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
you know, so like you can't just parachute somebody in from being third choice.
No, that's the point I'm making. That's the point. He's not going to parachute guys in like Coombs or like Casey after only seeing them for a couple of months. Certainly not into the Six Nations. If there were an autumn international series coming up or something like that, that'd be a different story. But the Irish coach lives and dies on the Six Nations results. That's all that matters, because that's all that matters to Irish rugby in a way.
Correct. And unfortunately, during the autumn series, you know, we didn't get off. We beat Wales, but we didn't really experiment that much. And then we were beaten by England, and then all bets were off because they kind of had to select. And then we played so poorly against Georgia, won, but played poorly. All bets were off then when it came to Scotland because...
Sounds like the 2007 World Cup.
Yeah, it does, because, you know, like they had to win that game to get any, to keep the credibility that they had. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, they played their number one team. Whereas if they were going into that say that even call it final against Scotland, having won the previous three games, you know, they could have said, well, we'll throw caution to the wind. Or if they even won in England, they could have thrown caution to the wind and gone a very experimental team versus Georgia.
Yeah, here's the thing. Does that new kind of, if you like, competitive structure to the autumn series mitigate against players, against coaches experimenting? Because as you say, Jay, if they'd won the previous three games, I guess, but if they'd won the previous three games, they wouldn't be playing Scotland. They would have been playing England or France in a final. And then you don't take a risk in a final. So I'm just wondering, do you think
Although
that's
France
maybe...
did.
Huh?
Although France did.
Yeah.
Well, but not by design, but by
they had no choice in the matter because of, you know. But that's a question. Does adding meaning to what some people kind of call meaningless friendlies actually mitigate against player development?
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think while I think we love the fact that the Pro 14 is going to be expanded with those South African teams and the quality of teams that all, you know, that we're going to be exposed to and we're going to watch, and it's not going to be, you know, putting 50 or 60 points. While some people enjoy that, I personally don't, going out and watching a victory of 50 or 60 nil. I just don't get any... What?
It's onanism.
Yeah. But some people enjoy that. Not so much for me. But...
That's wanking for everyone else, by the way.
But when those teams come in, I think because the league will become more competitive, we might see less and less opportunities for younger players within Leinster to develop.
Yeah. It's the ongoing kind of struggle or battle for balance between, you know, player development and actually winning something. You know, sometimes I think people will be happy if Leinster beat a few teams by 50 or 60 points and then never won a trophy because loads of young lads get to play. I mean, it's professional sport. I mean, they're professionals. They want to win.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, it's true.
But I mean, and the interesting thing is, like, I mean, we're talking about full strength teams looking likely for the game between Munster and Leinster. Although, as a long experienced watcher of rugby in Ireland and how it's run, I believe it when I see it. But or if I see it, because it has happened in the past, it's a game that is important to young players because it's a game that's at a higher level than they would normally experience. Young players generally, or the younger players generally, don't get a huge run out in Europe. Some of them, you get the odd one or two coming in for injuries and stuff like that, but they generally don't get, you know, a selection out of choice. Whereas these interpro games can be an opportunity to be chosen rather than just selected. So that makes these games more important. I mean, we saw, was it 2 years ago? And a guy who hasn't actually pushed on was Finian Witcherly, who had a brilliant game against Leinster a couple of years ago, and has been unfortunate with injury and selection and stuff like that, but hasn't pushed on. And that was a big game for him because he was playing at what was, to all intents and purposes, a European standard game, but he was playing it at home for Munster, and he had a huge performance. So for young players, these games are very, very important.
They are. And, you know, I was just going through the team, like, and there's a lot of youth that are available to Munster. I don't know whether they'll choose. Like, if you look at their halfbacks, I'm just thinking they're going to go with Murray and JJ. You know, from purest point of view, you'd love to see them experiment and go Casey Ben Ealy, but I don't see that happening. Or, like, you know, from our point of view, the rumors are that Ringrose isn't going to make it. So then, are they going to bring Frawley into the reckoning, or will they go Ross Byrne again?
I'd like to see Frawley and Ringrose. I think, or not Frawley and Ringrose, Frawley and Henshaw. I think they make a very good partnership, actually.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue against that. I'm just looking to see who we are expecting back. I think it's Furlong might be a week too soon, and James Lowe and Gary Ringrose the same. So centre, Kieran Frawley and Robbie Henshaw sounds good to me, especially if they're going to play those two big massive feckers, Delaney
and Farrell.
Like, that's a bit of a wall of sound to be running into, if you'll excuse the topical reference. So, you know, if you have Henshaw and, you know, they're both 6'4"-ish, 6'3" anyway, up against Delaney and Farrell, that's a bit of a clash of the titans. Joe Schmidt always loved his big backs. So, you know, there'll be four of them crashing into each other for our delectation. Which should please some of the punters.
It's funny, people say that, and I agree with you. Josh would like to have a big back around the place, but he picked an awful lot of small back lines.
Well, he picked what his best back line was. Yeah. But I have a feeling that if Joe Schmidt had, you know, a few very large backs available to him that were close in competency to the smaller ones, that he would have gone for the good big one being better than the good small one quite more often than he, because he didn't have a, you know, you got Darcy and O'Driscoll in midfield, who's going to look elsewhere generally, you know? They were one of the best centre partnerships of 21st century rugby, really, you know? So you know, along with Conrad Smith and A.N. Other for the All Blacks.
In the 2012... Mm-hmm. In the 2012 Heineken Cup final, if memory serves, the tallest Leinster back was Johnny Sexton.
Yeah, he could be right. He could be right. But anyway, backs have got bigger generally. People have got bigger, but backs have definitely got bigger in the last 10 years. Hugely. You know, there are guys tugging out on the wing now that you would have put in the bloody second row not long ago, you know. And certainly would have put on the flank. So, it's a different world.
My reasons why I picked Frawley and Henshaw are less to do with the size of from the neck down, and more to do with their capabilities from the neck up. Delaney is a good player, but Farrell's as stupid as rope.
I don't know. I like Farrell. He has his limitations, but I think he surprised me with his hands a few times. So he's got decent hands for a big man. He's not super slow for a big man. He's no sprint champion.
When Chris Farrell left Ulster, they said, we've lost Chris Farrell. What we do? I know, we'll clone him, but make him stupider. And that's where Stuart McCloskey came from.
Okay. Get off the fence there, Dave. Tell us what you really think. I'm giving Stuart McCloskey your address.
We bumped into Chris Farrell in Japan. You wouldn't want to bump into him on a dark alley.
So you didn't bump out of him.
Yeah.
The reason why Henshaw always kind of, he comes into these battles and people talk about the size, but the real gift Henshaw has is he has great rugby intelligence. He's got great vision. He's a good passer. He's a nice kicker. He's actually, I think he's a better 13 than he is a 12, and he's a bloody good 12. But Frawley, for me, looks like a really, really good 12. He could be, you know, the real thing.
He's a good second five. He's a good cross because he's a second 5'8". He has all the out-half skills, but he's also a big lad and can do the targety stuff in midfield as well.
So, I mean, wasn't it against Munster? Was it against Munster? It was that first try. Was it Henshaw or got the try where there was a kick through on first phase ball?
Mm-hmm.
On the resumption, that's the kind of thing you're looking for, that kind of game intelligence.
Yeah, beautiful little dink through, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just some other selections from our point of view. Obviously, I would imagine, again, all proviso that these lads are fit, that we're going to have Ryan in the second row, but then do we go for Fardy or Toner or even Ryan Baird?
That's a great set of options you got there. And you've also got Ross Maloney, you know. You've got them. And you've got Jack Dunn, and you've got, you know, I know he didn't have a great game against Ulster in the A game. But
not many did, in fact.
No, not many at all. Let's not go there. But, you know, there are a lot of guys coming through there. And we've still got, okay, for the rest of the season, we've got Fardy. We may have Toner again next season. But right now, any combination of those is pretty neat. And having the like of Toner to come off the bench or the like of Fardy to come off the bench, you know, it's a good spot we find ourselves.
It was just something that Dave mentioned earlier about having O'Mahony and his aerial prowess line out time. I'm just wondering if that'll sway them to pick Toner.
I think so.
Yeah, well, you could have something like Toner and James Ryan in the second row to start, and then you could have the like of Ryan Baird and Fardy both on the bench, one covering second row and one covering flanker, and you have the option of having a massive pack, you know, or a faster one, or, you know, you've got a lot of options with two guys like that who can play 4, 5, 6.
I believe it's meant to be a Mankey night on Saturday, so maybe they will go for a bigger pack.
Yeah, you might need a few big lads to crack a few heads.
I think in terms of the pack, it'll be an orthodox selection in terms of, depending on who's available, of course. But I think they'll go with Toner and Ryan, and I think that the back row will be an orthodox selection. I don't think it's a game for messing around in. And I think I agree with John. I think that they will put Fardy on the bench, and they will put Baird on the bench as well.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for it. So who are we putting in the back row to start then?
For me, it's Ruddock, Levy and
Harris.
And Doris, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I had written down there. I had Levy / Van der Fleer.
Who is in good form, it has to be said. I mean, he played really, really well against Ulster. He was superb against Ulster. But
you could even have... you could even have, if you're doing that 6-2 nonsense, you could even have both Levy and Van der Fleer in the mix there, you know.
Yeah.
You could have your extra. You could have 19 Fardy, 20 Ryan Baird, and 23 Dan Levy or Josh Van der Fleer. You know, that's some serious options in the second and back row. You could literally do anything in the forwards. Okay, you're restricting yourself in the backs. And I suspect that a lot of the reason we've gone for a 6-2 split is just we didn't have enough bodies in the backs.
If they do have Frawley, if they have Frawley playing, let's say, at 12, and just say something happens to Sexton, he could move Frawley into 10 and then bring on a utility back to slot into the center.
Wherever. Yeah.
Frawley does cover a multitude. Is James Lowe supposed to be back for this game?
No.
I thought he was, but John said he wasn't.
My assumption would be that he won't start. Jordan Larmer as utility back would be ideal for that. He can play, you know, 11, 15, 13. He has done so in the past. He'd be the ideal candidate there. And he'd also be a change-up, or not a change-up, but he'd be a different kind of player. I mean, you wouldn't be bringing on like for like.
He could bring you a bit of mayhem for 20 minutes. Yeah.
Well, who's going to play fullback, boys?
You never know.
I have Hugo in there.
I can see why. He's an orthodox fullback. Personally, I'd go for Jimmy O'Brien.
Or have him on the bench as a utility back. You wouldn't know. Just looking at Wednesday's Irish Times here is what I'm getting it from. Sean Cronin and Kieran Frawley are back in harness. Tadhg Furlong is weak too soon, as is Gary Ringrose and James Lowe. So it'll be unlikely to see James Lowe. Unlikely, but remotely possible is the way I'm reading that. So I'd say
Larmer comes in there.
Larmer on the wing would also be an option. I mean, obviously Kearney's there. Then you've got a bunch of guys who are there and thereabouts. Jimmy O'Brien, Keenan. If you pick Jimmy O'Brien a fullback, you pick Keenan on the wing. You go with Larmer a fullback.
Keenan Keller.
He's kind of not fallen off the radar, but doesn't seem to come into conversations during these big games.
Mm.
So it's going to be interesting to see.
I think it could be a good option for this game, depending on who's on what wing or what way around it is. You can play fullback too.
He can. I've just been very impressed with Jimmy O'Brien this season. I really, really have.
Yeah, he's a good prospect, I think. Just one position that we haven't really mentioned was hooker. I think you mentioned, John, there that Cronin was back from injury, according to the Irish Times. Like, Kelleher's obviously there, and you've got Tracy. Like, no one is really... Well, I thought actually Cronin, in fairness to him, had a pretty good 60 minutes in his last outing against Ulster. He scored a try, obviously, and he also they played pretty well. He hit his darts.
And Tracy had a shocker when he came on in the lineup. So, you know, that mitigates against him. And you've Dan Sheehan that hasn't had a look in ages. Don't know what the crack is with him.
Did have a great day in the A match.
His
darts are dreadful.
There is that. Yeah, he does run over fellas very nicely though. He did that a couple of times in the A game.
It's harder to do it when you don't have the ball.
That's true. So we'll see. We're not stuck for hookers. Put it that way. Tracy had a shocker and Sheehan didn't play that well, but you know, we don't know. Are either of the Kelleher's available? They haven't been around in a while, so I don't know what's going on there, but presuming they're both available, I'd say they'll be both playing or on the bench. Cronin maybe get another 60 minutes. Cronin is a player who's unlikely to be playing for Ireland again by the looks of it. So he's going to be our stalwart in the league if we are losing somebody like Kelleher to the Six Nations.
He's a guy I'd go with anyway.
Yeah, so getting him a bit of a run would be good, seeing as he came through. I know he had a bit of an issue after the Ulster game, but he's come through okay.
They could do what they did against Montpellier, which would be start what would be nominally the second choice front row and then bring on what is again nominally the first choice front row after the hour mark.
Yeah, you never know. Benty is playing reasonably well, and you've
Julian Bent are playing great stuff at the moment. So is Ed Byrne. So, you know.
Yeah. We're not sure of the players by the looks of it.
No.
Just turning to Munster a little bit, because of obviously the recent, say over the last three seasons, as I mentioned earlier, they've just won once in those three seasons, lost out on three semi-finals against us too. Do you think they kind of need it more than us just to kind of legitimize their credentials?
Absolutely.
We're
starting to need it too, though. You know, our position in the league is, we've got Munster away and Scarlets away as our two games in hand. And okay, I think we're 5 points behind Ulster, but you know, that's not where we're used to being, 5 points behind Ulster, you know. So we're not going to be taking any prisoners or taking any risks or going into the game thinking, we'll stroll through this. You know, we're going to have to be focused. And I'm sure Lancaster and Cullen are going to have people focused. And I don't think it's going to be a case of, plus the old usual bragging rights, Leinster, Munster, Irish trial, all that stuff will be going on. Mm. So I can't see us going down, taking them for granted and strolling through the game. So I think it's going to be a full contest.
I think Leinster need it more in terms of the competition. But as John kind of mentioned in passing, I think Munster need it more in terms of legitimizing their place at the top table. I remember in 2009-2010, we absolutely hammered them that first time back after Croke Park in the RDS. And that was kind of on foot of stuff that some of the Munster players had said on the Ireland tour to North America that time. That, you know, Ireland, Leinster didn't, it was a one-man thing that Leinster won that. It was only because of Rocky. If it wasn't for Rocky, Leinster never would have won, blah, 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 blah. And there was seriously serious hackles raised within Leinster uses a significant motivation. Munster never thought that Leinster were better than them. And that's a good thing. I mean, mentally, that's a good thing. But they never realized the benefits of being underdog the way we did coming into 2009. Now I think they are. And now they're using that themselves as motivation, as an internal thing. I mean, external motivation is what it is, but internal motivation is the most important. And they want to say, all right, listen, we are now again the best team in Ireland, maybe, and one of the best teams in Europe. And this is how we prove it. We prove it by beating Leinster in our own patch with, you know, relatively strong teams. There was an argument online about, you know, beating teams with strong teams. No rugby team ever goes out with its full strength team, ever, almost never. Teams are always under strength because, you know, you're always carrying. I think it's an eighth of your players will always be injured at any one time on average. So you're never going to go out with a full strength team, but you want to beat the best team that the opposition can put up against you to legitimize the position just for yourself, for your own internal motivation, nothing to do with anything else.
Mm-hmm. It's funny how it changes. Like I can remember going to see Leinster and Munster in October 2008, and we just signed Issa, Rocky, CJ, Van der Linde, who we didn't realize wasn't going to feature that well for us at that stage. And I was so sure that we were going to give him a good hiding. I brought a Munster friend of mine to the game. And, you know, that was the 18-0 one where we were nilled at home by them. And I did say on the way out that we'd swap cups, you know, because we had won the league and they had won the Heineken Cup. And I first time in my life I was ever right about such a thing. But what you just said, when we came back from the American tour, and it was a similar position in 2010, so 2 years on, and it was a 30-0, you know, so it was the same venue, the RDS. It was probably the last time we played them in the RDS, apart from semi-finals of the league.
That's regular season game there.
Yeah, so that's where it was. It was October 2010, I'm pretty sure, and yeah, 30-0 was a big, you know, Munster getting nailed was, you know, especially that Munster team that were still, you know, it was only 2 years after their Heineken Cup win. They were still a bloody
serious. John Hayes was sent off for stamping on Keane Healy.
Yeah. If you ever wanted proof that things weren't right in the Munster mindset, the most placid, non-dirty player possibly in the history of Irish rugby, getting sent off for... I remember at the time, Jason, you were there beside me. Everybody thought it was Dennis Leamy because we assumed it was Dennis Leamy.
If you remember, it was Paul O'Connell when it was all replayed on video.
On the rest,
Paul
O'Connell, Mike, yeah,
was looking for Leinster to be penalised for bringing down, for collapsing the ruck or the mall.
Yeah, yeah. it's just funny because everybody was going, oh, Dennis Leamy, typical Dennis Leamy, typical Dennis Leamy. And then, like, you could actually hear the jaws drop when they realized it was John Hayes.
Yeah. It's a long time ago, but I don't think it was actually malicious. I think he was, who knows what was going through his mind. In front.
I know, but just the idea that it was John Hayes at all, Jay, whether it was malicious or not.
Yeah. I know, yeah. I was telling you, I was watching and listened to a few podcasts today, and they both mentioned, wrongly, I think, they said that the Leinster-Munster rivalry has been diluted. Has it just been diluted because Munster haven't won many games?
I don't think it's been diluted at all. I just think that there hasn't been fans at a Munster-Leinster game in however long it's been, so it's hard to keep it. It's hard to judge the gloopiness of the syrup, as it were, because there's no fans there and you can't really tell. Online forums are not an accurate representation of, you know, of wider support bases. So I don't think it's been, from watching the two games, certainly there after rugby resumed, for the, you know, the 26 guys or the 27 guys or 28 guys for whom it mattered, 46 guys for whom it mattered. It didn't look like it had diminished one iota.
Yeah, well, like you say, the last time we played them in front of a crowd is December 2019, is it?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's over a year ago. So
I think the argument though was stretching back over the last 5 years. And they were kind of alluding to the cross-pollinization of Leinster players into Munster, the likes of Conway, Nick McCarthy, you know, and whoever else. I just think that they're professional rugby players, that they want to go where they want to go. Like, it could be a bit of influence put on them for sure. And I'm not saying that there isn't, but I know that a lot of that is blown up out of proportion as well. They are, if you don't put a gun to their head and say, you move to Belfast, you move to Limerick, you move to Galway, or else. It doesn't work like that. And, you know, sometimes it actually comes down to them wanting to play games at 10, for example, with Joey Carberry, instead of at 15, as was what was happening with him in Leinster, because Sexton was out injured and also Rob Kearney was out injured. So they had they couldn't put Ross Byrne at 15, so they put Ross Byrne at 10 and they put Joey Carberry at 15. That's what they did. They cut their cloth to suit their situation in Leinster, and then he got the hump because he wanted to play 10. And it was an opportunity. He said, you can go to Belfast. It was put to him. And he said, no. And his father, who's his agent, said, what about down to Munster? You have more chance. You have more opportunity there maybe than going to Ulster. And that's what happened in that case. Whereas media do kind of make it out to be, we're moving players around and using the invisible hand of David Nusafora playing God and moving players, moving chess pieces around, and that is just not the case.
No, it's not. He's just in Australia.
Well, he's in Australia, correct? But you know, that's just not the case. It's not the case that he puts a gun to someone's head and says move. Like, again,
I'd agree with a certain amount of what you say, Jason. I think there's a few more Chuck Colsons in the IRFU than you do, but I don't think it's as bad as sometimes people portray it to be. I would say, though, that I don't think that that's a factor in terms of diluting the rivalry. In fact, if anything, it would heighten it. There's nothing better than beating lads you've known since they were kids. I think if anything has diluted the rivalry, I think familiarity has. We play Munster a lot.
But do you know what's diluted it, lads? Is the fact that there isn't, like, they have to supplement their squad down there because where they traditionally got their players from is Limerick. And Limerick now is struggling to produce players. There's only one Limerick forward in their pack, Kilcoyne. A lot of their players are coming from Cork, and West Cork for some inexplicable reason, which would definitely not have been a hotbed of rugby in the past. Like, there's schools in Limerick that aren't producing players that, like, for example, Ardscoil Reese don't, like, produce players like Paul O'Connell. Yet the guy who's involved, one of the headmaster there is one of the guys that's involved with the Limerick Hurlers. So hurling has started to seep into that school now at the expense of rugby. Kids will play any sport that they look and they see Limerick very successful in hurling. Munster hasn't been successful. Haven't won a trophy for what is it, 10 years now? 9 years? So,
10 years.
Like, kids are drawn to success. And if you're not getting, if you're going out and you're playing, like, I've got the 9 results that Leinster have played Munster stretching back to the 17-18 season. Like, some of them have been tight That's enough affairs. But, you know, you know, like, it's 8-8-1 is the, so, like, the rivalry, Leinster mightn't even see Munster as a rival now. Like, they've actually beaten, Munster have beaten Leinster least over the last 3 seasons than any other province. But Connacht have beaten Leinster 4 times, Ulster 3 times, and Munster twice in the last 4 seasons. So that's where the rivalry is diluting, that Munster haven't been particularly good to have a rivalry. I mean, it'd be like Manchester United and Liverpool having a rivalry as they are now 1-2 in the league. But that rivalry would diminish if all of a sudden Liverpool happened to be demoted and or became, you know, Division 3 or Division 2. The people would just drift away from it and maybe not have the same interest. That's what it is.
I think that would possibly be. I mean, you're talking about, what you're saying about, say, the rivalry. But if that were the case, the rivalry would only be going down. It might decrease in one place, it would increase in another. So, everything you've said is true.
But not you and me, not you, me, and John, but possibly the players might see, well, who are we challenging against? Leinster might see their challenger this year as Ulster, not as Munster. Because Munster aren't in the same conference as them. So they might say, well, our number one challenge this year is to stay ahead of Ulster in the Pro 14.
I think
Munster once.
No matter what happens, we have to travel to Ravenhill this season.
We've mentioned three or four things there. And I think in as much as the rivalry has been diluted, and I don't think it's been greatly diluted, but I think it has. I mean, I think that all those things are a factor, but there's no one factor. And probably there's another five or six probably factors that contribute to it. You're talking about, you know, lack fans of games, the abundance of Munster Leinster games. Perhaps there have been more Leinster players in Munster than previously. Leinster perhaps having moved away from Munster made the distance between the two teams in terms of, you know, achievement greater than they have been in the past. You've got all these things. So there's and probably five or six more that we haven't even thought about. That feed into it, but I still don't think it's all that diluted. I you know, Leinster get Munster in the business end of a tournament, and by that I mean a final. You'll soon find plenty of rivalry again. I'd be certain that. Yeah. I mean, the last time Leinster played Munster in a final was when?
2011 in Cranmer Park.
There hasn't been a Leinster final. Or European knockout match since then, and those are the games that really, you know, rev up the heat up the blood. So there's a million factors for what is, I think, only a marginal diminution in the rivalry. We'll see on Saturday, you know, 5 minutes into that match, after the third fight has broken out, you know, you'll see how little the rivalry has diminished.
Yep, absolutely. Couldn't agree more with you. Can we just move on and have a quick chat about some of the other games that have been rearranged for this weekend? Just briefly, Scarlett's take on Cardiff. Dai Young back, John's second last favourite.
We're
going
to have to do a chat.
We should. We should just make out a list of his teams that he hasn't actually had as a second favourite.
I think John has had more second favourite teams than Liz Taylor's had husbands.
Well, back for Dai Young is back for sloppy seconds in Cardiff.
So he's the Richard Burton.
So that's interesting, him going back there. I mean, I wonder if he'll get his son back from Wasps, because his son's a pretty tasty player.
Well, he's going to have. Is it Thomas Young? No, which one of them? Is it Thomas Young or Francis who has come home to Wales this year under the 60 cap rule? One of them has to. Can't remember which one.
Has Thomas Young even played for Wales?
I'm not sure if he has. I'm not sure. I don't know. It must be. Thomas Francis, who's at Exeter, who has to come home this year if he wants to play for Wales.
Yeah. He has played for Wales, all right. Yeah. But I don't think Thomas Young has.
No, you're right.
He's a flanker.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Funny, a bit like the Wallace brothers, you know, a prop, a back row, and a winger. You've got a big, huge, feckin' Dai Young, who, by the way, hasn't, inexplicably. He's got to be in his 50s now.
Yeah, so, he's kicked the trend of nominative determinism.
Exactly. Well done, Dave. I like the way you put that. it's got to be seen as a bit of a failure for him, because Cardiff are on the skids now for a long time. Ever since I said they were going to have a season, good season. I never said they were my second favourite team. I just said they were going to have a good season about 4 years ago, and they fucking
disappeared. I'm not buying that, John. I'm not buying it.
Ever since, they've disappeared. Well, I couldn't be arsed looking it up.
That's not a thing behind you. That's not a character, is it, John?
Sorry?
That splash of pink there behind you in the screen, that's not a Cardiff away jersey, is it?
No, it looks like a see-through bag.
Oh, it's your posing pouch, sorry.
It's my moisturizer.
Ah, right. But, it could be, it's hard. I mean, Cardiff are a basket case. They really are. We've talked about clubs in basket cases in the past, but Cardiff are the basket case is basket case.
Professional level.
They moved back to Cardiff City Stadium. They've got, Dai Young's a really good coach. So getting him in is a good thing. Dwayne Peel has been highly regarded at Ulster, and he's coming in at the end of the season. That's a good thing. But whether Cardiff will drag them down into the morass of madness in which they dwell remains to be seen.
We'll see. It'd be good if they didn't, though. It'd be good if Dai Young dragged Cardiff out of the mire.
It's very important. I think Capital City Club, I know I would say this, but Capital City clubs are important for a league because having a big team in a capital city confers kudos on a league.
Indeed.
Did get them to the Heineken Cup quarterfinal against us. O'Driscoll scored that try.
Yeah, but they were muck by then already. That was 2013-ish or 2012, maybe.
They were dreadful that day. They were really, and I felt really sorry because I met. The OLSC had done a reception with the Cardiff City fans, and they were lovely people. The Cardiff City supporters or the Cardiff Blues supporters club, and they were lovely people, but their team really let them down that day, big time.
The one I thought you were about to refer to, Jason, was the one that Dai Young actually did bring them to, which was the 2009 kick final.
Against Leicester.
Semi-final, excuse me. When we played Munster in Tomlin Park, or in Croke Park, they were playing in the Millennium Stadium against Leicester, and it ended up a kick fest. And we all know what happened to poor old Martin.
I forgot all about that because I don't think I had sobered up for about a week.
Because of Croke Park, that game gets forgotten. And it's one of the great games of world of European rugby history, and it should be remembered more, but it's just swamped by the whole Croke Park palaver.
From my memory, I think Cardiff were well beaten in that game, and they came back with Dr. Jaw in injury or close to injury time to even it up. So I think there were two scores down at one stage, and they got two late tries to even the game up, and it ended up going to
now. So it's Mr. Jaw.
Mr. Jaw. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sorry, Professor Jaw. So fair play to them. That was when Welsh rugby was on a high, when the Ospreys had the Galacticos, Cardiff were flying high. Scarlet's not quite so much, and the Dragons have always been shit. But they were the two big teams at the time. Ospreys never made a semi final, famously, but they won a shitload of leagues. And Cardiff won a Challenge Cup, won two Challenge Cups. But back in those days, they won a Challenge Cup, and they came very close to being in the final against us. So
they won the Challenge Cup in Bilbao when we won the European Cup against Racing.
Well, that was obviously long after Dai Young had gone. I'm not sure if he was still there when they beat Toulon in the Challenge Cup back in 10 or so, was it?
I don't know.
It was back then anyway. I remember, I think it was 2010. They definitely beat Toulon anyway, and it was a Challenge Cup final.
I remember on their website, they put up a banner said they were European champions.
Mm. Well, they were. In fairness. I didn't say they were the European, they were a European champion.
Yeah.
Another fixture for is Real. Battle of the bottom dwellers, Zebre take on Edinburgh. I'm not sure if you saw the Glasgow-Edinburgh game. last
week. Did Zebre count as a bottom dweller anymore?
What's that?
Are Zebre not a middle dweller?
No, they're still sixth in Pool A, but they have got 13 points, three victories out of their 10 games. Edinburgh, Pool B.
Yeah,
well, Treviso, I don't think won any games, but they're in the other pool.
No, I'm just saying that there are three games that they've won. Two of them are against Treviso.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure they are. Yeah, you're right.
And I think one of the other ones, the Ospreys, is it?
Yeah.
It was at the start of the season, wasn't it?
Yeah. Edinburgh and Glasgow game was the one I saw. I can't remember. I think they played twice, but the one I saw was a fucking awful game. It was the one that was nil all at half time. Is that the one you're talking about?
No, there was another one last weekend, and it was actually a bit of a better game. But it ended, the first half ended quite bizarrely, John. I'm not sure. Do you remember this, Dave?
Yeah.
The Edinburgh scrum half got the ball. A train went by, blew its horn. I think he was a Kiwi. Thought that was the hooter. He thought that was the hooter for half time. He's running back into, like, from, say, his 10-metre line, runs back towards his own line. He's in his 22 and kicks the ball into touch. There's still about 20 or 30 seconds left of the second half, of the first half. So the line-out pursues, and I think a penalty was awarded, and Glasgow got the points from the penalty.
Oh.
And you could audibly hear over the referee's mic, someone shouting, "What are you doing?" as he's running back with the ball 40 meters to kick it into touch, 5 meters from his own line. But anyway, we mentioned last week about Duncan Weir signing for Glasgow. Ian Keatley's apparently signed for Glasgow as well. So he left Treviso. They sacked their coach and they got rid of some of their senior players. So,
yeah.
Whatever's going on. And the other game. Yeah. So, the other game of the weekend is Connacht against Ospreys on Sunday.
Didn't know that.
No, I think Connacht can win that.
Yeah. So, this is a big game for Connacht. They're currently 11 points behind Munster. So, you'd kind of say they possibly are out of it in their pool. However, if Munster don't get a point against us, and if Munster got even 4 points, Connacht got 4 points against the Ospreys, it would lift them to within 7 points behind Munster. So they still would be pretty much in the heel of the hunt.
You'd expect Connacht to beat Ospreys handily enough and probably get a bonus point out of it as well, which means that
the only thing is, though, Dave, that Aki is still out and also Sammy Arnold is out till April.
Yeah, but Tom Farrell is back, is he not? They have Tom Daly there, the Tom Club. So let's just hope they can bring some genius of love to the whole thing. they have a good team. They should beat Ospreys handily enough at home with a bonus point, so they lose. Because Connacht are very, very good at confounding expectations the wrong way.
They certainly are. And I see that Friend, first of all, I saw Sinead Cassan posted a tweet that he's close to signing a new deal for them. It was the usual saber rattling from Gavin Comiskey that he was on his way out of Connacht seems to have been wrong. And he also mentioned he called the new us. Basically,
I think Jason's we've lost frozen. Jason there, and he's back.
Sorry, I'm back, lads. Sorry about that. He said he called. That's what it was. Friend said that they've basically going to turn a corner. They've said we're the new us because he's sick of putting up these big performances, as we used to allude to, in the interprovincial championship and then playing crap the following week against some lesser light, beating Leinster and going out and putting in a poor performance against, you know, a lesser Ospreys. Light in Ospreys, there you go. Didn't want to name check them. But we'll see if that's the case or not.
Yeah, it is a very good point. I don't know why people, he seems to rise up the blood of a lot of people. So why do people read Gavin Comiskey anyway? The guy's useless. I stopped reading him about 6 months ago. I come on here to find out what he said.
I know, he does annoy me, I have to say.
But yeah, so...
Did you hear about England? Sorry, go on.
They have no food or trucks or anything?
Well, apart from all that bit.
No.
They have no coaches now either.
Oh, I heard that. Yes. They've had to self-isolate.
Proudfoot was, I think, tested positive. And he's obviously in close contact with Eddie Jones, who's self-isolating. So they've given the reins to John Mitchell.
And England are due in camp this weekend, if memory serves, are they not? They're supposed to be going to, not Bisham Abbey, whatever it's called, St. George's Park or whatever it's called these days. The FA School of Excellence, or the FA's Centre of Excellence for a long time. And I mean, that would kind of put the kibosh there, or not put the kibosh, but it'd certainly reduce its effectiveness if Eddie Jones isn't there, which is unfortunate.
True. One notable result from the weekend across in Blighty was that Saracens were beaten by the Ealing Trailfinders.
Oh, yeah.
I smiled when I saw that result.
You and most of the rugby world who aren't Saracens fans smiled when they saw
it. Don't think it was the world's strongest Saracens selection now.
I think it was a friendly too. I don't think they're playing any better game in the league. So
it doesn't matter, John. It doesn't matter.
I just want all the Premiership clubs to decide to close the trap door this season.
Yeah, you wonder.
And if they could do it on foot, I don't know if you can do this in committees, by, you know, an old Saracens motion to do the same thing, that'd be great.
Will be fun. Did you see that the French Rugby Federation board have approved the CVC offer? And a little bit more detail came out about it. It's 14.3% stake. Over 5 years, and it's 350 million. And they also mentioned that there's going to be, with an additional 67 million, if certain objectives are met by the end of season three. And that's coming from Laporte, so it's got to be true, right?
Yeah. I'd say one of the objectives that have to be met is not letting the Irish government list the Six Nations as a protected event. Yeah. Because if that happens, that'll change the valuation of that deal toot sweet. Because if those Irish games, if they're available free to air in Ireland, they'll have to be available free to air in France.
Well, we shall see what's going to happen there. I don't know, but that's what the French Rugby Union came out with anyway. We'll just quickly before we have to go, return back to our game. Before I move on, did you see Van Graan kind of upped the ante a little bit? He was getting a bit of digs in early. He said Leinster had used Munster's tactics in beating Ulster.
Yeah, it's that unique Munster tactic of scoring more points than the opposition. It's a tricky one. Nobody ever thought of that before.
I didn't see them kick the ball away and box kicks 27 times and win five back.
Paper never refused ink. Silicon substrate never refused data.
I just wanted to ask you though, lads, what is your prediction yourselves?
My prediction is that we'll get cut off in the middle of this answer. Leinster to win by 7.
I'll go Leinster by 4.
Tight enough. Yeah, I would say it'd be a one score game. I don't think it's you know, I just think that Munster have an awful lot. This is the define, and it's not just the players on the pitch. It's kind of, if they lose this game, Van Graan's under a bit of pressure. You know, they kind of snuck in. They're the eighth qualifier of the in the European table. Like they did win their two games, but they were less than convincing against Quinns. Okay, they beat Clermont, but they had conceded a bonus point after 25 minutes against Clermont. You know, and like it was a fantastic recovery. And whoever this, I think, must have been, I'm not sure if it was CJ or, excuse me, O'Mahony, who kept telling JJ to take the points, take the points, take the points, because they certainly worked their way back into the game. Yeah, well, I think you're right, lads. I think it's going to be very tight. Maybe a score in it, but based on just Munster possibly been able to put it up to us a bit more than in previous seasons, because they've got a lot of pressure on them. And obviously it's going to be Down and Thomond and Six Nations around the corner. But we shall see.
Yeah, I mean, just to go back to that, Jay, you said, I said Munster by seven, but I wouldn't, Leinster by seven, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was Munster by seven.
Yeah.
Jason saying nothing. He's not predicting anything.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying I think it's going to be within one score of both sides. I couldn't predict it.
Yeah, it's like, very tight. They're always tight.
Okay, so it's basically going to be a half. Jason's going at 50-50, so he's going to be definitely right, no matter what happens.
I still think that's one side, but I wouldn't be surprised if Munster did.
Unless one side wins by a landslide, then we can all leave then.
That's clearly why we're paid the big bucks to do this, isn't it?
That's why we're paid the absolutely no bucks whatsoever.
Well, that's our own choice, guys. We could have merchandised ourselves at any point.
We're not going to prostitute our talent.
We would if we had any.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
And we always, as ever, domination is, you know, viewers and ability.
Thank you. So, boys, thanks a million. Thanks very much for watching. Following us on Facebook or Twitter, please give us a like, a subscription, and a thumbs up. Thanks a million. Cheers.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.